As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the pitch. Happ blasts this ball out to deep right field, and it'll be a two-run homer. And now a 3-2 game turns into 5-2 Chicago. Again, the nemesis is Mount Lebanon's Ian Happ.
Yep. He owns the Pirates. Pirates must respect Ian Happ enough. Don Kelly sharing a hometown with Ian Happ. They not want to... I mean, we can ask Clement about this, too, coming up in a few minutes. Is it just unspoken now and agreed upon, like unwritten rules of baseball stuff to just not throw inside on guys? Is that just done? Is that just like a nobody, dead issue?
Nobody seems to throw inside.
Is high and tight done? Is that
nobody
dead?
Really, on purpose, yeah, it seems. Nobody really seems to break up double plays aggressively.
Yeah.
There was the one awkward
What happened
one
to that
Griffin.
Kind of baseball? I know it's... a little bit risky.
And then guys, and even when guys get beamed with pitches, it doesn't seem like there's the tempers flaring and all that. There's no more Ernesto Frieri's getting, you know, Andrew McCutchen
hit. Our guy Davinsky got suspended for that.
Jablonski?
And then he ended up going on a date with that girl on Twitter who put him on blast.
Wait, he did?
You were out that day. Some TikTok woman...
put him on blast.
Put him on blast for wanting to get to second base... or more on the first date, and she said no, and he was like, okay, that's fine, thanks, and that was it. And then she went online and made fun of him for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he went on the date after he got made fun of by her.
No, after he got suspended, he went on the date. He had time to date because he was not allowed to play. Anyways.
Gotcha.
How about this? Was just passed my way. We can bring this up to Clement. We can also bring this up to Noah Hyles in a couple of hours. Person texting me. I'm just pulling it up on my phone. Do with this what you want. But as of now, the Pirates have had zero talks with Brandon Lau about a contract extension. None.
Yeah, they should Nothing. Be. They need to be. They need to at least be talking about, hey, Brandon, would you like to make $25 million a year for the next 2 or 3 years? You know what? How about for the next 2 years and we'll toss a mutual option on it. A player option for year three.
That makes me feel like they know what they would offer is insulting. And so they're just not going to make an offer at all. Or I guess you don't, you know, there's no rule that says in order to get it done, you have to do it now. You know, you'd be paying like the highest price for him if you tried to do it now because of how well he's played this year. You know, if you tried to do it if he got off to a Marcelo Ozuna start, you could probably try to sneak a fast one on him. But then again, you wouldn't want to sign him to a new deal.
No.
If he were struggling
it's
like
the
that.
Classic, yeah, it's the classic conundrum. Yeah.
So
if he were struggling, you wouldn't want to do this. He's great. You
right.
can't do this cheap.
Exactly. So he's not the third bowl of porridge. He's not the bowl that's just right. He's too good. You don't want too bad. You want just right. You want, like, to get a deal done, you'd want
if
something
he had, like,
in the middle.
If he had, like, an 820 OPS right now and not a 900 OPS.
Yeah, you'd want above average production.
If he was...
not elite production.
7 home runs right now, not 14.
I got to be honest, I'm not surprised by this because we had Mackey on yesterday. You asked him a question about Lau, and he works for the Pirates. Did he not sound like someone who also thought that it was, like, mission impossible to sign him
to a
contract?
He said, I would like to see them do it, but if it was 4 and 100, he said, just no. And then I said, how about 3 and 75? He said, I would hope that they would want to ask him about that and see what he says. But it sounds like the kind of deal that almost, like, gets it over the line. Yes, we know you might not be good at the end of this. Like, the fourth year might look really ugly.
So,
is just off the table.
So the other thing, and I think this is, like, fair to bring up here,
Yeah.
To like maybe leaven some of the criticism that might get thrown the Pirates' way about this situation, if there is any. We also have no clue what the heck baseball is going to look like after this year. So from that perspective, I would think they'd have a better idea of which way the wind is blowing than we would, because they're one of 30 teams who is involved in like the future negotiations of the sport.
Yep.
And, you know, unless we, here's what we see done right now. We see young guys like Connor Griffin and McGonigal in Detroit get signed. I don't know how many like big name guys are getting deals done mid-season or in-season. So
established players.
Yes. Like, especially on the high end of things like Lau. He's a premier offensive second baseman.
He's one of the 10 best offensive players in the NL right now.
Yeah.
That's not an exaggeration. So, that's the truth.
In fairness to them, I think that that could also be a pretty big reason why there isn't anything that's being discussed, because the entire sport could change economically in a very, very short amount of
fair
time.
Fair enough, but I think almost any economic change, even if it were a dramatic one, would see the Pirates needing to spend more money on their roster.
Yeah.
Which is why I can hear somebody out there maybe hearing you say that going, yeah, Pony, that makes sense, but that still shouldn't preclude them from aggressively trying to sign him. Like, neither one of the proposals that the players have put out or the owners, I think, has an iceberg's chance in hell of happening, just for the record.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a first salvo by each side. But let's just play the little game that the owner's side of this actually somehow passes.
Yep.
The players do the unthinkable. Scott Boras is ready to like go cliff diving or something because of this. He's so mad.
Yeah.
And they agree to a hard cap and a hard floor.
That, yeah.
And those are the two numbers, 171 and 245.
Yep.
If I were Ben Cherington, the first thing I would be doing is like, hey, Brandon, we got to spend a bunch more money to get up there.
Yeah.
How would you like $25 million? Do you like hitting to a wall that's 320 feet away that hasn't sapped your power whatsoever?
So Marcus Semien in 2021 with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Hit 45 jacks,
hit 45 homers, drove in 102, and had an 873 OPS. He was 30 years old.
Lau's 31 this year.
He has can he have an 873 OPS? I think it's possible. What is it right now?
904.
904.
He's had chunks of seasons like this where it's been above 900.
And that deal got done, and Semien got 7 years, $175 million in December of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5 years later. The cost of everything has gone up. You're telling me if you're the agent of Brandon Lau,
you're going to take 25.
You're going to try to. But I'm saying you're going to try to get that total money.
Sure.
Right? I mean, that's.
You're going to try to get a lot of money out of
somebody. So would you do that? Would you sign him to that deal? Would you ink him for 7 years if you had to?
I think that's a bridge too far. Do you think he's going to hit really well into his late 30s? You can justify it.
Semien's never come close to that since.
That's
26
right.
Homers the next year. 29 the year after that. Pretty good. 826 OPS.
But then he's tailed
23
off.
In Texas 2 years ago. 15 last year in Texas. This year with the
was
Mets.
Was there a juiced balls thing in 2021? No. I ask for a very specific reason. Brandon Lau's best year in the majors as a full season.
Yeah, I guess maybe the offensive environment.
39 home runs.
What was his OPS plus?
His OPS plus was 140. But that was, again, over 149 games. Not like some of these partial seasons. His career OPS plus is 125. He was 15 points better than that. The year before, in a very short span in the weird 2020 year, he was also unbelievable. He was basically the same player he's been this year.
Yep.
But it does make me wonder about the offensive environment.
Jack, would you give him that contract? 7 years, 175? It's not your money.
Yeah,
it's
not
Bob
my money.
Nuttings.
I would.
You would?
I would.
So you're paying him into his late 30s.
Who cares?
25. Who
okay,
cares?
But hold on.
What if he blows?
Swing a baseball bat. You can DH.
What, so you want Marcus Semien hitting 213 with a 571 OPS?
I have confidence that Brandon Lau is a better player.
I mean, not every one of these guys is like Nelson
Based
Cruz.
On what?
Right now.
Yes, but right now, at this point in Simeon's career, I just gave you his numbers. He was hitting 45 home runs.
By the way, well, hold on. I'm gonna step in for Jack here. I'm going to make a point supporting the idea that Lau is a better player and has always been. Marcus Semien, for the first 6 years of his MLB career, was by definition a below-average offensive player.
Okay.
He just was. Starting in 2019, and then it kind of turned off again in 2020. But in 2019 and in 2021, he was much better.
Okay.
His overall offensive numbers, even if you come from 2019 to now and you exclude everything else, are still worse than Brandon Lau's career numbers.
Fair enough. I mean, the thing that you did, you just argued for is Lau getting even more money than him, though.
Well, no, I'm arguing on Jack's side of it, saying like, "7 years, $225 million." Screw it.
By that point, I mean, why wouldn't his agent argue for $30 million a year instead of 25?
I mean, age
at
is going to be the thing that factors
not.
In.
If you're paying him $30 million a year for 7 years, I probably wouldn't do that.
Jack, remember, it's not your money, and you're only going up five more.
Yeah, again, it's not my money, and they also don't have the opportunity to sign second baseman. They're going to hit 35 homers every year. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd do it.
It is a very appealing thought because the way he does it makes it look easy. Like, it's all quick. It's all compact. It looks like it'll age decently.
MLB Network just called it the second best trade of the offseason.
What would the best one be?
The best one was Kyle Harrison. Of course, the Brewers fleeced the Red Sox and got another pitcher who is just out of his ass right now, putting up crazy numbers to go along with the Miz and have that 1-2 punch there with a guy who seriously looks like a kid who like profiles as a guy that like works the concession stand at a movie theater. Like a guy that's like 17 years old and that's his summer job is to ask you if you want butter on your popcorn. That's Kyle Harrison. And he's a stud.
Mizorowski kind of looks like a weird, like kind of Jameson Taillon's.
I thought the same thing. Yes,
brother.
I thought the same thing. He looks like Taillon's little brother. He absolutely does. They both look like Buzz Lightyear.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's mainly I just see very much strong Jameson Taillon vibes. Mizorowski, by the way, you know what?
The Miz.
Gonna be real funny to see how the Brewers handle him because you know what his
magic, are they gonna peel back his innings?
Well, do you know what his magic innings cutoff should be? About 165 or so.
Is he gonna go to the bullpen too?
What if he
some have suggested with
what if
Ashcraft?
He does?
Then they should be mocked. I think
they've got a little bit of a different place to be dealing from though because they're 33-20. Which if the Pirates had a bullpen that was worth half a crap, they would be right now.
Texas on the Edgar Steiner Associates fan text line person, your law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you.
Carmen, going back into the bullpen, just what was your immediate response when Don Kelly gave you the news?
Obviously just excited to have Jared back with us. Can honestly say I'm just still communicating with the organization and the people in my corner, whether that's my family and my agency, about what's next, and I really don't have any comments after that.
Yeah, I don't think the Pirates wanted to hear that. I think in a perfect world, they want to hear, hey,
kumbaya,
I'm one of 13 pitchers. I'll do whatever they want me to do. I'll put my hand in the pile.
There's a very clear part of that that matters, and it's my agency. His agency controls his contract negotiations. Pony, would you like to tell the people which position makes more money, starter or reliever? I mean, I think that's what it
boils down
to. I want
to know what the heck he meant by what's next. I would have liked some clarification on that.
I noticed that too. I assume it's just like, referring to, yeah, they're sending me to the bullpen. That's what's next.
But as I kind of took that as if I have any recourse.
Well, no, dude. It's a baseball decision. No matter how much people think it sucks, are you going to just not play?
No, but you could ask for a trade. Bert Blyleven did that. That's going back a very long time, and he's a Hall of Fame pitcher, but it happens.
I do. I'm sympathetic to him. I mean, his whip, like some of his numbers are not awesome overall for the year, but like some of them are actually pretty damn good. And I would say he's been trending in the right direction lately.
But what if that attitude spills over to his first couple appearances in the bullpen and he's not good? Do you give him a free pass then?
I don't give anybody a free pass for attitude stuff because part of being a pro athlete, like the flip side of the coin of you're going to make a lot of money by like normal person standards is you've got to eat crap sometimes in these situations.
Even if it's unfair.
Well, isn't that kind of the whole point of saying you got to eat crap? Like, inherently, yep, that's unfair. You're better than Bubba Chandler if you're this guy right now. But I put that aside and say, you've got to perform.
Let's get Matt Clement, our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst, a chance to react to this. Former big league pitcher, Cubbies, Red Sox, pitched in a lot of high-pressure situations, dealt with success and failure in the major leagues. So he's a great guy to talk to about this. Brought to you by Smale Chevy, Latrobe, now part of the Smale Auto Group family. Matt, what's your reaction to what you just heard there from Majinski?
Well, you know, one of my first takes back in spring training, I thought he was going to be in the rotation. He's kind of my guy, so I've felt the pressure every start with him. So I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of proud of the reaction. I really am. I felt like he was going to wear it. I felt like he was going to wear it, say the right things, which he didn't say anything wrong. But he's frustrated, and
he's being his own best advocate. He's sticking up for himself is what he's doing there.
Yeah, and sometimes frustration boils times. And I think I talked to Malzi last week about this exact situation, said this is probably what's going to happen because it just kind of made, you know, you could, when you talk to people, you could just feel this is what was going to happen. And, you know, I related to, like, one time when I was with the Red Sox, and it was my, and now I was also a 6 or 7 or 8 year veteran at this point, but they skipped me in the rotation the year after I was an All-Star. They like bumped me back 3 days when we were playing in Yankee Stadium for the late, great Tim Wakefield to pitch against the Yankees, who was really good against the Yankees. So I'm kind of relating myself to the one situation, and I didn't handle it well. I don't know what I said to the media, but I kind of stormed into Tito's office, when Tito told me, I didn't storm in, but when Tito told me, I kind of snapped back something that was not professional, and it made me feel better for a minute. But when I tell a story now, I think, what the heck was I doing?
Yeah.
At the time, but that's kind of how I relate to it.
And but that's Tim Wakefield. I mean, Tim Wakefield is a very underrated pitcher all time. This is a guy losing out on potentially a lot of money for Bubba Chandler, who is second in the league
Jones.
In losses. Right.
And Jared Jones, who also acted just as bad.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Let's love.
At if not worse, when he was asked about what is your role going to be, and he's pitched for exactly 1 year in the majors.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I feel like, you know, this decision was coming. The Pirates kind of threw it out there almost like an audition in my eyes. That's kind of how it was, by not announcing what was going on. There's not a doubt in my mind that the only option that could happen was Chandler go down. Chandler wasn't going to the pen. There wasn't ever an option. I've been speaking to you guys about this for weeks. Jones was not going to the bullpen immediately. He was not. It's just not what's right for his recovery, mm-hmm, and the value and the asset that he is. It was.
Why is
happening.
That not right for his recovery? Tell people why you don't think that was the best move for him to pitch in a relief role for his arm
it's
recovery.
It's not what I think. It's not what I think. It's what I know.
Yeah.
You have an asset, right? So you have this asset, and you rank your assets. If I'm going to be quick with this, I've done this a couple times. You have Skeens, you have Griffin, and you have Hernandez right now. And then you have this next tier. You know, Jared Jones is in this next tier with probably Cruz, maybe Chandler, and some other guys along the way. But that's kind of like how you look at it. When you're think about this, when you're coming back from a surgery like this, every time you throw, especially when you start throwing bullpens, I come in, I stretch, I'm with the trainer, I go throw my plyo balls against the wall, I long toss, I jog a little bit, I go throw my bullpen, and then maybe as it progresses, I throw to live to hitters, and I go into games. You aren't going to throw somebody that's an asset like this, maybe a non-asset, but somebody that's an asset and part of your future you think can help you win a playoff or a series or get in the playoffs, you aren't going to throw him directly in the pen where you can't manage his recovery. It's about his recovery is the key to this whole thing that I've been preaching for a long time right now. He has to be able to recover. Now, if it doesn't go well and he gets a little bit further out from this surgery, now he's 12 months, 14 months, playoff situation, maybe you use him that way because he's got a little bit more to it. But you don't want to do that. Secondly, you have a bullpen that you would agree with me, both of you, that it's the thing that's killing us right now.
Yeah.
Is the bullpen. So you put him in a bullpen in a situation where you have to watch his recovery. Well, we can. I was talking to one of my friends that's a pitching coach, not about this situation, just in general pitching the other day. Well, we can use him once every 5 days. Well, if we can, if he's one of the guys down there, we can only use him once every 5 days. Then what are we going to run into? Well, now we've got to use Montgomery 3 days in a row. Now we got to use somebody else 3 days. Maybe we have to put somebody like who's struggling right now. We're trying to rehabilitate his confidence. We have to throw him in a role. We don't want to throw him in a tie ball game right now that might just completely obliterate his confidence. So that's why Jones is going in this rotation, at least to start this thing, because, I mean, that there's a lot of easy reasons in my mind with that.
Matt, is it also true in your opinion? Because this, to me, I've heard brought up, well, because Chandler is not good at something, which is
controlling his pitches.
Command. He's not adept to going into a relief role, but Majinski has shown he can do it before, so it's an easier fit for him to go with the bullpen. It's like Majinski gets penalized or punished for being able to do something that Chandler can't, and he gets demoted because he profiles better as a relief pitcher than a starting pitcher. Do you agree with that?
Don't get me wrong. Majinski's, this isn't cool for Majinski. Like, he didn't deserve this. Like, this is a rare situation. That's why this is happening. It really is. And that's why I've said the whole time also, like, it's either Chandler's going down or Majinski's going the bull. Those were the options that were going to come out. They weren't going to do a six-man rotation. That was never an option in their minds.
Yep.
Majinski, because he's good at something else, and this, you're right, this comes down to money, man. This comes down to dollars for Majinski. And it's hard for him.
He's a victim of his own versatility.
Yes.
That's the bottom line.
Yes. Yes, he's got this opportunity.
That's why I would be so pissed if I was him, and I would not feel bad at all about saying what I said, because it's like you're punishing me and probably, potentially, costing me money because I'm good at something that the other guy isn't, and we don't even know if he's good at the thing that we hope he's good at. It would be very tough for me to stomach that if I were in his shoes.
Agree. And he's very frustrated. And I thought the interview was fine. Mm-hmm. He showed some frustration. He didn't throw somebody under the bus. He didn't he indirectly said what he wanted to say without crossing the line completely and blowing somebody up or going off or making it viral. I thought he handled the interview for somebody that was disappointed, bummed, infecting his like immediate life, could handle that spot. I think if you want to dig deeper in this from the Pirates perspective, like I think we all agree, Majinski's getting the raw end here.
Yep.
I think a bad lights out bullpen right now, this might be Chandler. But you can't afford to send a guy that's walking so many people into a bullpen right now that's really scuffling and costing some games. I think that's another – Majinski's a victim of that also in this whole situation too.
Matt, you laid out where you think Jared Jones is on the organizational totem pole. Why do you think he is so highly thought of by them? Because one of the things that's come up here over the last few days is – we're talking about a guy that had an ERA over 4 his last year as a starting pitcher. Yeah, he had big moments. Yeah, he flashed. Yeah, he can blow pitches by people. Yeah, he's super confident and cocky and all those things. But at the end of the day, the numbers were not reflective of someone that is necessarily going to be a top-end starting pitcher. So why do you think the Pirates do view him as one of the most important people in their organization moving forward?
Well, He showed in a time probably more so than like Chandler has at this point in his career. As a young pitcher, he could be dominant over a period of time every fifth day. And now, you know, they got to think some of the time where that ERA started to balloon a little bit and it went from elite. He had elite numbers at the beginning of this. And the end of it, you know, could that have been because he was injured? Could that have been the start of the injury? So I think they've seen this ceiling on him that could be here. Now, you want to talk about how I thought Majinski, you know, I got to give it to him. And that's not, you know, I'm pretty conservative in the most part and for the players and everything. I thought Majinski's interview really good. Jones, even though he said he wasn't talking about that, handled that interview bad. And that makes all of us and everybody else be like, wait a second, we're giving this guy the reward.
Yep.
When he flat out said, I'm not going to the bullpen, I'm just starting, which he might have known that already when he said that, and instead of just saying the right thing. And I just feel like he has this elite upside to be right in that rotation at the top of it. I think we talked early season and we were throwing all those predictions around, and you said, who's starting your third game of a playoff series? And
yeah.
I said Jones. And it's because he has the ability to wipe you out. That's that confidence he has. Do I expect this to be perfect? Do I expect him to come out and go crazy here? I don't necessarily.
Well, what is he limited to, Matt? What would you guess tonight, like his first start? Is he on a 60-pitch count? Is it 75 because he pitched so much in the minor leagues for a month building up to it? Is it normal, like 85, 90 pitches? What do you think?
Somewhere between, I would guess, if you want to be conservative, 4 to 5 innings. And if things go brilliantly well, he could maybe see the sixth inning. Like ridiculous, stupid pitch count where he's, you know, he finishes the fifth with like 55
pitches. He's Maddoxing
in
them.
Yes, yes, which he's unlikely to do because he's a swing and miss guy. And swing and miss guys, you know, their pitch count gets deeper, and he, that's the kind of guy he is. And it's a, you know, Chandler's probably right there with him in that totem pole in their mind right now also. So it's a, you know, that's Matt's totem pole. It might be completely wrong, but that's kind of how I view how this holding's going down right now. And it's a good problem for the Pirates to have. Honestly, it's a great problem. And I really see, I think the Pirates have this vision of Majewski, not just, okay, be the bulk guy. Okay, be the, I don't see him being like the piggyback guy. I think
I don't want him to be.
Stroke,
I want him to be in super high leverage spots, getting big outs. That's what I want.
I see 3-inning Kent Tekulve type saves possibly if this works out the right way. I see like this is going to be my guy. If we're not going Soto late, we bring him in the seventh, because let's think, his stuff is pretty elite too. He's throwing right around what all these guys are throwing with 4-pitch. He could, you know, when he goes in the bullpen setting,
I see him
that
as
stuff
20
might tick up.
Matt, I see him as 2016 Andrew Miller coming to Cleveland and being used as a weapon everywhere they needed him in the bullpen. That's what I hope.
I hope you're right about that, Mulls.
And I actually think that there's people in the Pirates organization that see that as an avenue at how this thing plays out. I really do. And he's the one guy that you could have done that with. And again, it's unfair to him. He's earned it. And I think it took so long to announce this because they just didn't know how this was going to play out. And he kind of trumped them by how he pitched. He really did. He trumped them and forced their hands and forced them that is awkward. I heard you guys talking before I came on. The interesting thing will be, are you going to give him a, like you ask Malzy, are you going to give him a pass if he doesn't do well? And not a pass, but it could, here's the take. I'll swerve another direction with you. What if he doesn't do well and this decision caused him to go into a funk? And then you took one of your pitchers that's so hot right now. That's where this could get a little bit awkward.
Bubba Chandler also has to pitch really well because they have made their very clear decision that they have prioritized Bubba and his ceiling. I think the pressure turns up on him considerably.
And, Matt, he made it sound after his start against the Cubs like he's safe. He said afterwards, I got 20 more of these things. I wouldn't be so sure about that. He made it sound like he's got this long runway where he's going to get starts the whole rest of the year. I wouldn't be so, unless he's been told that, and he made it sound nonchalant cavalier, like he's got the entire season in the rotation.
I'm guessing he assumes that, and I'm guessing the Pirates don't act like he doesn't have that. I don't know if he's been told that, though, right? Because, you know, for the Pirates to say, hey, we're turning up the pressure on you, you better figure it out, or Majewski's coming back in the rotation, that's stupid because
yep.
You're putting undue pressure on
Correct.
The kid. But I agree with you. I don't think his runway is forever here. But I do. I since doing this and I started talking to people and hearing different things and everything else, I feel like this. You know, Connor Griffin, Chandler, Henry Davis. I think they all think of these guys as we need to develop. We need to try to win while we're developing these guys in the big league, sending them to back to Triple A. Develop is up. Now that doesn't mean it doesn't get worse and it doesn't get there, but I think that's the stance this Pirates organization, from my viewpoint, has with those kind of guys. We're not going to struggles aren't going to Triple A right now. Struggles, we're going to figure it out and iron out here while we try to win.
Matt, your reaction to the rumor that the Pirates have had zero talks whatsoever with Brandon Lau about a contract extension. He's already got 14 homers. He's on pace for 40-plus. It'd be the first 40-plus home run season by a Pirate since the early 70s in Willie Stargell. He's a free agent at the end of the year. We don't know what the heck's going to happen with baseball at the end of the year. They're starting to trade proposals right now, the league and the Players Association. What's your reaction to them not even really having preliminary discussions about a contract extension in late May?
If I were the Pirates, I probably wouldn't be either. Honestly, I think that maybe if Lau comes to me, if his representatives come to me and say, hey, he loves it here, man. This is unbelievable. We're willing to get something done here and probably for less than what he's projecting to get, then I think the Pirates would dance a little bit. But I feel like the Pirates have played their hand right with Lau still. He still doesn't play against a lot of lefties. He's gotten pinch hit for by Nick York twice.
Yep.
You know, late in games while he's on a heater nonetheless. So I think the Pirates have played their hand. It's not that they don't appreciate him. It's not that they don't love him. It's not that he hasn't been one of the main cogs and reasons this offense has changed. But I feel like the Pirates, to start this conversation with the Pirates, you're way yourself at risk at overpaying right now, because he is on pace to get paid big time money. And it's a move that the Pirates, with their budget and everything they're doing, is not probably, that's not the guy in their mind that they're going to do something like that with.
Matt, we have those offers that got traded back and forth. The MLBPA has already responded and basically said again, generations of players like yourself have done what was necessary to make sure that a salary cap would never happen in Major League Baseball. As a guy that is now an ex-player and on the outside looking in, what do you make of that? Because as a fan, I see a proposal that says $170 million floor for teams, and I get excited because that makes the Pirates spend a lot more money and makes baseball, in theory, more competitive.
Surprised zero that that's the Players Association. I mean, that the salary cap was never an option when we were playing or thought of. I love the first stuff that came out. I actually looked at the proposal and said, no, the salary cap isn't even mentioned here. We have a chance of getting something done here. You know, if there's any kind of like starting to go back and forth with this, and the floor is what Pittsburgh needs. Pittsburgh needs the floor. And I think if you get that floor, it gives you more options to do things without being such a have not that they claim to be and are in a position to be. So
But why would owners agree to a floor when there's no cap whatsoever? It's never going to be one out of two and the players get their bottom end floor here, and then suddenly...
You're saying there has to be a cap and a floor, Chris.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If I'm an owner, I'm not going to say, oh, you guys want us to spend a certain amount of money and raise everything up? Well, we're putting a cap on it or we're not doing it. That's what I would say back.
Yeah, and you're right, Malzy. You're 100% right. But I think there's going to be a point here where baseball is a really good thing right now. Everybody loves it. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's making a lot of money. You have TV agreements that are one being done right now with all these major things. You don't want to be on a strike during those or in a lockout. And I feel like there's going to be some take somewhere with the players. There's going to be some take. I just, from my experience, and I'll say this first off, like, I was so worried about staying in the big leagues. Everybody's doing a good with that, and everybody's making money, and there was movement and free agency. I didn't pay attention to a lot of that stuff that was going on, so I'm not an expert on this.
Yeah,
I was like, hey, it's working. I'm going with it. I'm never crossing the line. You do what you got to do, and I'm going to be happy. And so I'm not an expert on it, but I just know that stance has all players' side, and they see that, like, you know, it's affected the NFL, it's affected the NHL. The owners, from the owner's side, though, Malzy, you're right. You know, like they need the owners need it, but are the owners willing to risk not making money and ruining a good thing to put to put that together? That's the big question.
Well, I'll say one more thing. As somebody who supports the owners 0.0% of the time in these situations,
that is true, Matt.
Just not going to say any more about that before I get myself in trouble. If the revenues are still mostly right on the owner's side, which I mean they are, they're still revenue sharing. I just again see very little reason for much of the status quo around baseball to actually change in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're going to see slight changes if they keep it similar to what we have. You might see a floor raise or something. I saw on the minimum salary go up, concessions both ways, probably some stuff in the drafts, probably some international stuff. But like, it's in everybody's best interest right now to keep playing. And unfortunately for a small market team like the Pirates, they need a salary cap like that really helps even the field for them. But, you know, I remember Malzy, you and I talking, I think it was last year, about I asked you if you were rooting for, I can't remember who's in the playoffs to win, the Guardians, I almost said the Indians, because or if they win, that hurts the Pirates. Because a small market team like us is winning and getting there, and everybody else.
Oh yeah, I hate it when I've gotten very different in my older age here. The more I understand this, whenever it's like the little guy in the playoffs, wow, their payroll's only $78 million against the mighty Dodgers. I'm like, yeah, I hope the mighty Dodgers squash them like a bug on a windshield. That's what should happen. Get what you pay for.
The Brewers are killing everybody right now. They're selling their best players at the end of the year. Then they go on a 14-game winning streak and sweep the Cubs every time they play them and everything else.
Yep.
Like the Brewers and here are the Rays right now. Rays are like every other year, the Rays, every 2 out of 3 years, the Rays go off and they're hanging in there and way ahead of the Red Sox who are spending all this money and the Yankees. So I just think there's enough of that right now. It's going to be hard because the haves can point to the Brewers. The haves can point to the Rays right now. And there's not enough of the have-nots that have a stance because of those teams that make it there. And I remember you telling me that last year, Malzy. It's kind of sad from a Pirate that that's the case, because the normal human nature is to root for those teams because they're the good story. But think about it. Blue Jays, they were the fourth highest payroll last year. You like to say, oh, the Blue Jays were a great story. They're a team that aren't doing things like the Yankees and Dodgers and everybody else. You know, I think something that could be in that player's the Players Association or this agreement or whatever, something, and I don't know where it stands. Again, I'm not an expert on this, but you know, maybe some kind of reign over the deferred money stuff. You know, because right now
that's
like
a huge loophole for the Dodgers that they're using.
I saw somebody say the Dodgers are signing a 15-year, $12 contract for a prospect with $248,999,988 in deferred money. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, but they somehow pull it off.
Well, I mean, it's a loophole and they're exploiting it. To me, that's fair play. If you want to catch up to it, find a way to do it yourself.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And as much as it's infuriating and as much as it's making them dominate baseball, everybody else has a chance to do this. And there's a lot of really wealthy owners that probably can do this. But the Dodgers are saying, you know what? Come stop us. You know, come do it with us. Come join us. Come outbid us in these situations. And, you know, I'm just wondering if that comes up in these negotiations somehow, a regulation on it.
Matt Clement, everybody. Matt, a Whippeel champion at Butler, as they have won. What was that, 6A championship?
6A, first time in school history. First time in school history. Last time we were there, my junior year, I'm going to age myself here, 1992.
And what happened?
Your son was lording it over you. I saw a clip where he was being asked. He said, "I've got this one over on my dad and my brother." Like what? At least one of his brothers, right?
Both brothers. Both brothers.
Yeah.
Both brothers.
Love that. Love that for him. He is going to be able to do the old circle the bases with the home run motion for the rest of his life with you guys.
Matt, great stuff. We'll talk again on Monday. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, that was great, guys. Thanks.
Matt Clement, you can watch us on Twitter. That's where you saw Matt Clement's face and his Butler shirt commemorating that championship. That music means it's time for the Donnie Football Debrief, and it is brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company with over 100 years of baking experience. One problem, Donnie hosted for the midday guys today, so intern Dom is here instead. And by the way, fan trading cards are brought to you by Baseball Card Castle, your go-to destination for sports cards, collectibles, and memorabilia. These cards have picks and stats of fan hosts and also got my name wrong which makes it a collectible item. So you can go pick them up at Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. They did not make an intern Dom card, but they recently released a second edition of fan trading cards, and Austin Bechtold got his own card.
It's ridiculous.
I agree.
I'm sure that'll be popular.
Is he going to be distributing those around at Baldwin Alumni Association gatherings?
He said today that he was maybe ridiculed and picked on at Baldwin.
I wonder why.
And now that he is on the fan, those people have come back around and are starting to kiss his fanny.
I've been a day one fan employee and have been on afternoon drive for 13 years, and not even people I went to high school with who I didn't get along with kiss my fanny.
I mean, I was pretty popular in high school, so I can't comment, but I
what happened after you woke up from your dream?
I was still very popular in high school.
If you had to rank these individuals as far as how popular they were back at Shaler High School relative to their class, you have Brian Badko.
Okay.
You have intern Dom.
You.
Me.
You have Mark Madden.
Okay.
And you have Heather Abram.
Okay.
If you had to guess most popular in their class.
When they were in high school?
When they were in high school.
Intern Dom 1. I'd go Heather Abraham 2. I'd go Backo 3. And I'd go Mark Madden 4.
No love for Double M?
I'd go Heather 1, Batco 2, Madden 3, Dom 4.
It's a fair ranking.
I think he had
when you said you were 1?
I mean, I am fourth, so how is that fair?
That's actually very unfair.
I'm not going to argue with Malzi. That's his ranking. It's a wrong
ranking. Your whole expressed purpose on living on this earth is to argue with everyone about everything.
We had a guest on yesterday who gave a ranking, and you cut him off on the air to say what a terrible ranking it is.
No, I didn't cut him off. You asked me what my opinion was.
23 hours ago, you had no problem embarrassing somebody for their rankings on the air, and now your stance is, I don't argue people's rankings
anymore?
All right,
wait a minute.
Apparently, Malzi knows he's wrong. Sorry.
Apparently, Dom's ranking might be more right than wrong. We've got multiple YouTube chatters who have occasionally tuned in, I would guess, to Madden, saying he freely admits he was not popular in high school.
That's why he's fourth. He has publicly said he did not enjoy his time at Shaler.
You did not use that, however, as part of your ranking.
And well, I didn't know I needed analysis.
I mean, I'm shocked you don't think Heather was more popular than you.
I put her at 2.
And Batko played basketball. And
I love Brian Batko. It's nothing personal against him at all.
Absolutely.
It sounds like it's personal,
very personal
against both of them.
Way below yourself.
Way below. It's more in a positive of me and Heather. It's not a knock on Brian. You know, it's like Ben Roethlisberger is a top 10 quarterback, but he's not better than Tom Brady. That's not a knock on him. Not everybody can be better than Tom Brady.
All right. What do you have for the debrief today?
Hold on.
Yes, he called himself Tom Brady. That's also what I got from that. Debrief?
So I have something fun for the debrief today.
All right.
You two are known for your sports knowledge.
All right.
And having an in-depth knowledge of football. So I thought we'd play a little game that was inspired by something I saw on TikTok, kind of like this. A little bit different, but I thought it'd be fun if we brought it here.
Okay.
So I have 5 audio clips that I'm about to play. They are from a Super Bowl from this century. And the game is, you have to guess what Super Bowl it is from.
All right.
Now, it's not obvious. It's not going to tell you the teams and everything else, but you kind of have to use
some clues.
Do we
have to, like, buzz in Jeopardy style?
What would you rather do? We can go back and forth. You guys
go back and forth.
Perfect.
Chance.
Tony, you're not pissing me off like Malzi, so you get to go first.
Thank you.
Here is your first audio clip. What Super Bowl was this from?
It snapped over the head of Peyton Manning. A flag is down, and the ball's out of the back of the end zone. It's a safety to start this game, as Manning wasn't ready.
That would be Super Bowl 48, 2013, Broncos and Seahawks.
That would be correct, Pony. Good work. Good work.
These are very easy. Chris would have gotten that
too. They get more difficult. Malzi, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready, Dom.
And here we are, the two-point play. This is it. Pass, Amendola. Flag is down. Amendola's in.
Offside. Number 93 defense.
This is a tie game.
Well, no, I don't know what Super Bowl number it is, but that was what the, I want to say that would have been the Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl.
Is that your final answer?
Sure, because it's wrong.
That is incorrect. Pony, would you like to take a stab at it?
Can I hear it again?
You can.
Here we are, the two-point play.
This is it. Pass, Amendola. Flag is down. Amendola's in.
Offside. Number 93 defense.
This is a tie game.
Okay, so
wow,
it's from
really,
this,
guys?
It's from this century?
This century. I'm stunned.
Wait a minute here. What are you stunned by?
You haven't gotten it yet.
I haven't offered up an answer yet.
I'm stunned Malzi didn't get it, and you haven't gotten it already.
That's the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl.
Correct. Okay. Super Bowl 51. That was the two-point conversion to tie the game.
I don't know why you jumped down my throat there. I just wanted to hear it one more time.
Well, you took some time to think about it. All right, Pony, it's back to you. We got three more here.
Serenity now.
Pony, what Super Bowl is this play from?
And Bradshaw, and he wanted to stop. He wanted to stop, and he gets into the end zone. That's exactly what New England was doing. They were letting him go into the end zone.
That is 2011 Giants and Patriots.
Correct. Super Bowl 46.
That was
Ahmad Bradshaw.
One, yes.
You think that was the easiest one?
Easiest one yet.
All right, Malzi, let's see how you do with the second to last clip. What Super Bowl is this play from?
Look out here. He's intercepted. Picked off by Calvin Hayden. And Hayden still running inside the 20. And Hayden may run it back all the way. He does. Calvin Hayden.
Oh.
Are the sound effects from Dom necessary, Malsy?
Isn't that the Patriots-Falcons again?
Incorrect.
Again, don't care.
Yeah, way to have fun, Malzi, with the game.
Well, I'd suck at this game. This game was entirely designed for two Syracuse guys to go over on a mere public school graduate.
Pony?
Which is fine. I don't know why that was the first thing that popped into my mind.
That is Colts-Bears Super Bowl?
Correct. Colts-Bears Super Bowl 41. That was Kelvin Hayden intercepting Rex Grossman.
Yeah, he did a lot of that. Well,
play that last one here.
Look out here. He's intercepted.
No, we already heard this one.
Play the fifth one.
You said play the... Oh, I get what you're saying. Play the fifth and last one. I thought you meant play
and
it again.
And this is popular on TikTok, what we're doing?
Yeah, it is, actually.
Is this a big deal on TikTok, Jack?
I have seen it, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Jack. All right, last one, boys. What Super Bowl was this play from?
Meanwhile, third down and five here. And now you got it flipped back here to Danny Amendola, who throws, and it's Brady who can't.
That's the Eagles-Patriots one, I thought.
Correct. That was Super Bowl 52 when Tom Brady couldn't make, I think it was a third down catch.
Yeah, he alligator-armed it like Todd Pinkston, famous Eagle from back in the day. Pony, congratulations on the most predictable gentleman's sweep of all time.
Wasn't that fun? I had fun.
I want to let you know something, though, Chris.
Me or Dom?
I want you to know this, Chris.
Okay.
Well, and I promise you, hand to God, that I mean this. I had zero to do with this being a part of today's show. He did not come to me and say, hey, do you want to come up with a trivia game that makes you look good and embarrasses Malzi?
Yeah, we already do that at 5:30 on Tuesdays.
Yes, I agree. I don't want to kick a dead horse.
There's a thing called the name game
here.
But
he wanted to. That just...
No, I'm fine with that. I just suck at this game.
But I don't want you to take it out on me if you're going to have any kind of...
How would I take it out on you?
Because I did not...
It's a feel-good Friday.
Exactly. I did not want to create a segment where it was, oh, let's all mock Chris Mueller's knowledge of audio.
That does big numbers.
I was more so upset that Malzi didn't seem to be having fun. He kind of gave up there toward the end.
No, because I just... Well, I was having fun, but I was... Very, you know, the self-loathing kicks in there.
Would you say that it reminded you of sometimes Callis and Quiz Callis, where he just starts
shutting down?
Absolutely. And no one, that's not fun. Nobody has fun with that. Pony had a good time. There was some gamesmanship there.
What gamesmanship was there? Gamesmanship implies that something was done by Pony to make sure he won, where he just answered the questions correctly.
No, he asked to play the clip again. He was kind of thinking about it. We had some back and forth. You were just like, Patriots, Eagles, I don't know. And then you asked for the next clip.
Yeah, the only thing I'll agree with Dom on is you did not really put out a feel-good Friday vibe there that entire game.
Sports Sharp on YouTube. Chris is legit pissed at this ad hoc trivia. You're not you were very not fine about all that, nor were you feeling good, he went on to say.
He's right.
It's not wrong. He's not wrong.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the sports media podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.